The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, after some rapid touring around the country once again. So yes, episode 289. And let me just give a big shout out to the Travel for the Mind group from Australia, who I accompanied for a short period from Barranca Bermeja up the river to Gamarra for lunch, Gamarra Cesar, and from Gamarra to El Banco Magdalena, where we then hopped out of the boats and into 4x4s for a dusty 4x4 almost rally drive from there to Mompós. And I hope that they enjoyed the trip to Mompós, my little tierrita there. It was a great trip accompanying some Australian journalism royalty, George Negus and Kirsty Cockburn. So that was very cool indeed. And a wonderful card of thank you delivered to me as we finished the drive up to Cartagena from Mompós. And of course, that was not without its adventures. A 3-hour wait due to a huge truck spinning off the road and blocking traffic there between Plato and Carmen de Bolívar. But such is travel in Colombia. But it was a great honor to be with people who were so interested, informed, and inquisitive about Colombia. And I think I may have talked, if you put all of my little speeches together over the trip, I probably talked for about 10 hours straight. So that's why my voice may be a little bit gravelly today. But on this episode 289, we are discussing the upcoming elections. I hope to have more on elections for October, upcoming elections, local elections around the country. And we have the opportunity to sit down with a young man, a hopeful for a council seat, Diego Lacerna. He's with the Alianza Verde party. That's the party led up by Claudia Lopez, who's running for mayor. He's number 26 on the ballot. So for those of you who are listening to this and interested, remember number 26. If you like his proposals for Bogota, I find them very interesting indeed. But what I like the most is that because he wears his spectacles and so on, one of his phrases is Bogota needs more nerds. Bogota necesita más nerdos. So, well, at least he's honest, I guess. And of course, we're going to go over to Adrian Alsima in Medellin for the news update in the week that was. Ivan Marquez and Jesus Santrich returning to the Monte once again and calling upon the FARC to take up arms. Not a positive piece of news, and always difficult for the country's image overseas, and especially for those of us who have interests in tourism. But not the end of the world either. Challenging, but not the end of the world. Let's remember that. And we'll have more about that at another episode down the line. But here, for the time being, episode 289 is Adrian Alsima giving you the news report. And then segment 3, we'll be chatting to Diego Lacerna, a hopeful for a council spot in Bogota, an activist for the city, the capital. Very interesting guy. Number 26 on the ballot. Do check it out and have a good listen. It's really interesting to hear what a young guy thinks about water security, criminality, and of course, the inevitable transport questions in our capital city. So keep on listening. Thank you and goodbye.
My name is Adrian Alsima, and this is news for Colombia Calling for September 2, 2019. Colombia's peace process is facing its worst-case scenario after the FARC's former political leader, Iván Márquez, ordered demobilized guerrillas to rearm. Márquez and some 15 other FARC commanders said that the government's failures to implement the 2016 peace deal left them with no alternative. There is no saying how many of the 10,000 FARC members will follow the orders of Márquez and rearm. The United Nations, which monitors the peace process, rejected the dissidents and again urged Duque to implement the peace deal as agreed. Peace advocates have called on Colombians to rally behind the process and resist efforts to sabotage it. The witness tampering trial that could put former President Álvaro Uribe in prison began today. The High Court will be hearing almost 50 witnesses until October 8, when Uribe is set to defend himself against charges he bribed and threatened witnesses that link him to a death squad. In the first day of witness hearings, the Supreme Court heard the testimony of Victor, a former paramilitary fighter who was bribed by one of the far-right politician's attorney, according to wiretaps obtained by the court. The Supreme Court can send the former president to jail or allow him to await a verdict in freedom at the end of the hearings. Uribe is the first former president in the history of Colombia to face criminal charges before the Supreme Court. While his attorneys try to keep him out of prison, Uribe has been trying to capitalize on the crisis in the peace process while on campaign. The former president is called to end the process with the FARC at rallies of his far-right party's candidates who take part in October's local elections. Whether this strategy will work is a gamble. Uribe's approval rating has hit its lowest level since 2000, and his trial is expected to reveal gory details about his allegedly criminal behavior during the election race. Colombia's Supreme Court has begged the U.S. government to cooperate in the investigation into the unsubstantiated claim that FARC leader Jesús Santrich sought to traffic drugs. The indictment of New York prosecutor Jeffrey Berman triggered a chain of events that led to the current crisis in Colombia, but was based on an allegedly illegal DEA operation. Berman is the former law partner of Rudy Giuliani, the attorney of U.S. President Donald Trump, and was recused from the investigation against Trump lawyer Michael Cohen days after indicting Santrich. The U.S. dollar hit a record high against the Colombian peso last week for the third time in a month. The devaluation of the peso and other Latin American currencies is due to the ongoing trade war between the U.S. and China, according to economists. The insecurity about the peso's future is causing major concerns about Colombians' ability to pay off foreign debt and the impact on inflation. President Iván Duque's economic policy could fall apart because the government's finance law allegedly violates the Constitution. If the Constitutional Court agrees with the 24 legal challenges, this year's budget and Duque's four-year development plan will be without financing. According to one former Constitutional Court president, the court is likely to send Finance Minister Alberto Carrasquilla back to the drawing board because he illegally pushed a finance bill through Congress. The 2014 election campaigns of former President Juan Manuel Santos and his opponent Oscar Iván Zuluaga may have received illegal campaign contributions from multiple foreign corporations. According to Weekly Semana, the prosecution has asked the National Electoral Council and Congress to investigate allegedly illegal contributions by bankrupt Canadian mining firm Pacific Rubiales to both campaigns. The campaigns are already under investigation over allegedly illegal funding by corrupt Brazilian engineering firm Odebrecht. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
Ah,
And yes, this is the third segment of episode 289 of the Columbia Calling podcast. I'm Richard McCall here in the very nice offices around the Avenida Chile, that's the 72 in Bogota, with Diego Lacerna. He's an urbanist and he's also running for the Consejo. He's a hopeful for the Consejo of Bogota. Partido Verde, Alianza Verde, who is that's led up by Claudia López, and she's running for mayor, and I think she's doing very well in the opinion polls at the moment, but we don't trust opinion polls now in the world. Diego is number 26, Alianza Verde, so for those of you out there who can vote in these elections, you know, have a listen to his proposals. Have a listen to what he's got to say from the point of view of someone who loves Bogota. He's behind the phrase "Lo que es con Bogota es conmigo." So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and of course his plans, perhaps as a future politician. So Diego, welcome on Columbia Calling.
Thank you, Richard. I'm very impressed that you've done 280 plus. Episodes on Colombia. Congratulations. It's very impressive.
Thank you. It's a labor of love. It's a labor of love. And you know what? I enjoy it. I get a lot of emails now from Colombians and Europeans and Americans and so on. So if I can provide a little more real information about Colombia, then it's a positive thing, isn't it? It's a positive thing.
Yes.
Tell me, Diego. Now, you are an urbanist. You studied overseas.
Yes, I did both my undergraduate and graduate studies in the U.S.
Wow.
I did political science and economics at Columbia. I came back to Columbia, the country, for, I don't know, 6 years.
Yeah.
Worked mostly in the public sector, politics, a little bit of political consulting. And then I returned to Boston, to MIT, to do my graduate degree in city planning. And after that, I returned to run for city council.
Nice. And so why? I mean, with this background in city planning, political science, economics even, why do you want to be a politician?
Basically, because I think you can complain about politicians all you want, but in the end, it's the government that can make some of the biggest changes in society, particularly speaking, cities. So you can work for an NGO, you can work for a development firm, and you might like have some impact on the city. But from the government, you can do a lot. And it's much better to be an elected official than it is to be a public employee. Because unfortunately, public employees, although many times they are much better educated and much more technical in their skills, always have to respond to a politician. So instead of complaining about politicians all my life, I decided to become one.
It's now your time. And can I just ask how old you are? Because, you know, you're going to be a young politician.
I'm 35.
Yes, you're a young politician. So you're dynamic. You've got your stars in your eyes. You believe in change. I like this. So I worked for 12 days in the Alcaldía before I quit. So I know what you... But this was under Petro some time ago. But yes, answering to about 15 different people before you could do anything made it impossible, even in 12 days, to get anything done. And everything was a meeting. Meeting after meeting after meeting. And I was like, no, I'm better outside. I'm better outside complaining, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
But so, I mean, as you come with this background of politics, economics, and city planning, you must have many ideas for the city, many ideas of how we can improve it. And let's not talk about transport to start with, because we talk that to death.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's, we know it needs to be changed. We know things need to be added. It doesn't take a genius to understand that. So I don't want to bore people, because we've all been in Bogota traffic and we've all been stuck in the Transmilenio and we've all been stranded on a bus that's gone somewhere that we don't want it to go, or didn't plan to go. It's true. You know, you just get on one and you think and then suddenly you're in, I don't know, Fontibón or somewhere. What are your other proposals as a future politician for the city?
Well, there's many. In fact, I like to say I'm in love with Bogota. In fact, I chose that number 26 because of a slogan that you know very well, which is a 2,600 meters closer to the stars, which for the listeners that don't know this slogan was the slogan of the city in like maybe the year 2000. And it was like the climax of Bogota pride, certainly during my life. So I like that feeling, and I want Bogotanos to feel very proud of their city again, and that's why I chose. And by Bogotanos, I don't mean the people who were born here or have Bogotano parents. I mean the people from all over Colombia or the world who happen to live in Bogota. So although that's not a proposal, it is a desire of mine of getting into politics. It's that Bogotanos feel proud and take care of their city. Regarding specific proposals, I'm very interested in water management in cities. This is not like the hottest electoral topic, but for a city planner like myself, it's very important. Bogota's rivers have always been sewers, which is a very unfortunate situation, because in other countries you can go walk by the river, take your girlfriend, take your children, and enjoy the view. That is absolutely impossible in Bogota. So there are several ways to improve that. The city is making some huge investments in plants to clean the Bogota River. But as Bogota developed informally, most of it, the connections, the rainwater and the sewage are mixed and always end up in the river. And we have to make some big investments to separate the rainwater from the sewage so that the sewage will go to a treatment plant and the rainwater can go to the river. And that's one of the main things we need to pay attention regarding that.
Let's talk about that, because I found that fascinating. I mean, you look at the Rio Bogotá and it's kind of bubbling with pollution. And our current mayor, Enrique Peñalosa, was talking about cleaning it up and being able to swim in it. Now, I would like to see him swim in it first, because it's still not great. You know, we got the Rio Bogotá, and then if you think of downtown, the San Francisco, San Jorge, and the others, and then if you think of the Calle, the Cañua, the Calle Sexta, which is now essentially the overflow from the old Bronx. I mean, there's a, when you're talking about just the rivers, it, that connects to so many different elements in the city. We're looking at homelessness, addiction, you're looking at industrialization, you're looking at environmental practices, and you're looking at, I would say, development. I mean, it's everything is in there. So you say it's not a popular thing, but if you can show people, and what's the river on the outside of, I went there with the army engineers many years ago and we were all flooded, the Chicu or Chinu River that flooded, it's out near Tocota. I mean, there needs to be, and it's just, it's imperative that work is done on the rivers. And I know that a lot of people throw their trash down there too. So their drains, as you say, connected to rain runoff and sewage, that's when they block up and they flood their own streets. And so you're talking about everything with rivers.
And you didn't mention one that's very important, and it's crime. In fact, many of these rivers that you mentioned, Bogotanos, we call them caños. Caños is, I wouldn't know how to say it in English very well, but it's sort of like a sewage. And it's the perfect place for thieves to hide and go out, rob somebody, and then hide back in. So this is something that cannot be solved easily, but it is something that we have never paid attention to. So recuperating, getting back those public spaces around water, cleaning that water so it's a pleasant place to visit, will change the face of Bogota in many aspects. It will allow lucrative, interesting real estate developments to happen around them. But it will also help regain security in those areas. I don't know if you've been to Fucha or Tunjuelo, which are the two rivers in the south of Bogota, but it's an absolute shame. The Tunjuelo in particular is very polluted, and just recuperating that river would allow all the people who are like in low-income neighborhoods around it to profit greatly, not only from the public space that would appear around it, but also from the increase in value in their properties. So it's something we need to begin paying attention to that will not probably payback in the short term, but that will change the face of Bogota.
This is it. Now, you touched on such an important topic there, the short term and the long term. In my few years in Colombia, it seems that local people just seem to want politicians to deliver straight away, and then they're so fast to say, oh, the government does nothing, but it's about the long-term planning. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, politics is not so much long-term. So how are you going to convince the voters that the long-term is worth thinking of?
Well, you have to mix long-term proposals and short-term. Right now, the main short-term concern for Bogotanos is security.
Yeah.
With Venezuelan immigration in the last few years, among like other factors, there has been a serious deterioration, decay in the security situation. And it's very frustrating to people here that out of 10 criminals, one gets caught and he's usually released within a few hours. So there's like no semblance of justice. And if there's no justice, there's no incentives for the criminals to stop committing crimes. And, well, there's an interesting like cross of responsibilities here, because in Colombia, in Bogota, the judicial system depends on the national government. The police depends on the national government, but the security concerns are very local. Mm. So integrating, aligning those interests is difficult sometimes. Bogota has been very concerned about strengthening police capacity in the last few years, but I think we need to move on to a second level of policy making in that respect, and it's studying how the judicial system works in the city, and the city with its own funds trying to support the judicial branch in guaranteeing that these guys who are found committing crimes, maybe sometimes petty but violent crimes, yeah, like stealing cell phones on the Transmilenio, which is probably the most common crime in Bogota,
mm-hmm,
which causes a lot of deaths but rarely gets brought to justice. So the idea is to focus on that. That is a very immediate concern for Bogotá.
That plays into the perception of security, doesn't it? It's mm-hmm, like, you know, you hear what is on the news every single day. So I don't watch Colombian news anymore because it's all, you know, incredibly local. Again, not big picture news. It's like, you know, Transmilenio, this, that, which all needs to be dealt with. But it's, you know, that my father-in-law in the coast is watching about pickpockets in Bogota, and so then calling me up to say, oh, be careful of my grandson, you know, it's not right, you know, this is how this works. But this is interesting that you say, I mean, of course, Venezuela is, something that we need to take into account, especially as Bogota is the huge, it absorbs all of these people as the capital city. But it's hardly that, you know, Colombia was a remanso de paz beforehand.
It's like, sure.
You know, I don't want to blame Venezuelans, but I know that there's an upturn due mm-hmm to an increased number of, let's say, bad elements or people pushed into a situation where they had to be. So I'm doing my investigations in the district of Los Martires, which of course is a very problematic district, and mm-hmm, and I spend a lot of time on the Calle 13, so around by the Estación de la Sabana, and if I'm there after 5 p.m., the whole society changes. During the daytime, most of the businesses are looked after by security forces or security, private security. There's a lot of commerce. Mm-hmm. And I can walk around as a 6'2" white gringo. I can walk around and it's fine. Unless it's fine. But at the same time, when I'm there after 5, you see the kids coming out. I say kids because they're young. Coming out with just cardboard boxes, putting them on the street, and they've got their stolen phones to sell. And it's there in daylight, mm-hmm, you know, and the police are walking past because they know there's nothing really at the end of it they can do. Or, well, I don't want to suggest that they're all corrupt or anything, but some are taking payments and so on. But, I mean, how do we deal with this? If they can act with such impunity, mm-hmm, like setting up a box and putting it out front, how do we work with this? I don't know. I mean, you have to have some plans.
Yes, and this is particularly what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's of course, we need to go after the guy who's using a knife to steal a phone in Transmilenio. Mm. But More importantly, you need to understand how the business works.
Yeah.
That guy that steals the phone in the Transmilenio, where does he take it to get sold? Many of these phones do not are not sold in Bogota. They're exported. So these are pretty elaborate organizations that we need to understand before we can dismantle. And it is in that sense that I think the city has to get more involved in security policy making, which has been so far mostly left up to the police to do themselves. Bogota just created a security department 3 years ago. So it's very new. And as I said before, coordinating that with the justice system, with the local police, with the fiscalía, which is the one that does the accusing or the investigation of many of the crimes, is a challenge that Bogota has not been able to succeed at. And we need to focus on that. You're right. And the stealing phones is not like a new crime in Bogota, certainly. But probably the slowing of the economy and the immigration of people from Venezuela in very difficult circumstances has made the security situation worse in Bogota.
So we've talked security, we've talked rivers. Tell me another of your proposals.
Okay, so you don't want me to talk about transportation, so I'll avoid...
We can do transportation at the very end.
Okay.
Because those of us who live here are up to our eyeballs in transportation.
Okay. So one of the huge challenges, right now we're discussing in the city council, well, I'm not, but the city is discussing in the city council, the POT. The POT is the plan of how Bogota is going to organize itself in the next 12 years. And there's a very heated argument around where the city should build more housing. And this is not housing built by the city. It's just like where people can develop new housing. And there's two alternatives. One is mostly in the north of Bogota, in areas that are rural. And the other one is what is called urban revitalization or urban renewal, although that's like a pretty discredited term for English speakers, which is what most people agree on. Like, let's increase the height of buildings in areas of the city that are already urbanized, but improve like the public spaces, the schools, the roads around it. However, that has been very difficult to do in Bogota, especially like coordinated projects that are not like a lot by lot development. And the POT is making a big bet on pulling those projects through. I think we can discuss the specifics of the projects, but Bogota should try to grow within its urban perimeter as much as possible, paying attention to those things. I mentioned public space and, well, transportation as well.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of empty or poorly used properties, and all of those industrial areas, I would say, I want to say Ricaurte, I want to say...
zona industrial.
But you can redevelop, because it's redevelopment, but obviously without pushing out the traditional communities. It's about working with the communities, allowing them to remain.
Rather,
what I'm seeing under this government is a redevelopment which will push them out, especially in places like La Stanzuela. You know, these are traditional communities. They've been there 40, 50 years, maybe more. And when you think of a barrio like La Stanzuela or even Ricaurte, their proximity to the center of Bogota and all of those, I mean, makes the price of the value of the land incredibly you know, worthwhile. So it's the POT, the Plan de Ordenamiento Territorial, I think it's taking all of this into account.
I think Peñalosa, our current mayor, is very bad at dialogue with communities in general.
Yeah.
So we definitely have to pay attention that these urban redevelopment, urban revitalization projects take into account communities.
Yeah.
That's not a reason to oppose the project outright. But that said, this challenge of including communities in this type of project is a global challenge.
Yes.
It hasn't been really mastered anywhere. And we in Bogota still have a lot to learn in that respect. But it should be one of the goals to keep communities as much as possible connected and there.
Otherwise, you end up having like ghost areas, you know, again, that end up being empty, or everyone leaves for work in the morning. There's no commerce there in the daytime. You know, it's interesting how these cities evolve. So I'm taking a deep breath now. With a further, we've got 10, 15 minutes. I don't think it's going to be enough for transport. Come on then, tell me about the transport. Now, under Claudia López, are we going to get a Transmilenio por la Séptima? The
no, she said like definitely no.
Good, because I don't think the renders that Alcalde Peñalosa has given are correct. I don't see the space that he's drawn up. He's done a populist campaign in saying, oh, it's the only the people in stratos 5 and 6 from like Calle 34 to Calle 110 don't want it because they say, but when you measure it, it doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't fit, but I don't know. You know better than me. So there's no Transmilenio for the Septima. What are we going to get to solve Bogota's transport woes?
you asked me for my opinion.
Yes, it's your opinion.
I think one of the main problems Bogota has is that every mayor develops projects. Yeah. And just as soon as he's beginning to launch them or contract them, the next mayor comes in and he throws them out.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very unfortunate circumstance. And much of the debate around Bogota's first metro line has been that. Claudia López, our Green Party candidate for mayor, has said, look, this is not a metro I would have done, but I'm sick of this argument. We're going to do what Peñalosa has been designing, because otherwise we'll continue to go through the years without like building anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly one solution that we haven't been able to put together in a long time. But the majority of Bogota is going to continue depending on buses, whether it's Transmilenio or it's the SITP. So we need to invest a lot in improving those. And in that respect, I have a very concrete proposal.
Go for it.
I don't know if you use any of these buses, but one of the most frustrating things that can happen is that you go out to wait for the bus, and you can wait for the bus 10, 20, 30, 40 minutes, and you have absolutely no idea how long it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
All these buses have GPS devices. Transmilenio has the information. It's relatively easy to let people know how long the next bus is going to take, but they haven't done so. And that is one very simple, non-expensive thing that they could do to improve public transportation in Bogota.
So you could put the dot matrix, whatever, on the bus stops.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have the app. Everybody has a smartphone today.
At least the app. Yeah. Maybe the screens are more expensive. That's like the ideal solution.
You know, this is what happened under Ken Livingstone, the mayor in London. When I was a kid, buses were the least reliable form of transport, the traffic. And then since I've been going back, you're just like, it's the best thing ever. Of course, he's increased the buses, but also you've got either the dot matrix telling you or the app. And so you know when to leave your house to go and catch the bus, which makes so much more sense. You know, I like your concrete plan. I hope that comes through. Talking about the metro, yeah, I don't care if it's elevated or if it's underground. But surely, since it's not been built, you can make parts which are elevated and also plan for parts which are underground.
Yes.
It's not been built. There's time still, unfortunately. I would like to see a Tren de Cercanías. I mean, I would think, you know, even Buenos Aires, even Rio de Janeiro, not great ones, but they have them, which connect, you know, with a place like Mosquera, Zipaquirá, to the south into Soacha. Could you imagine connecting Soacha and then taking all of that traffic off the connection to Bogota? It would take it all.
Yes, that's one of Claudia's main proposals for mayor. It's to halt the expansion of Transmilenio, or at least, well, the lines that Peñalosa has proposed. They're like 15. She said, like, we're not going to do all of those. We're going to do the ones that, like, feed the the demand for the metro. But I'm going to focus on developing these rail lines. One in the north that comes from Chian, Cajica. The other one goes to Soacha. And the one that's most developed is the one that comes from the west.
Yeah.
From Mosquera, Faca, Madrid. So, yes, that's a great idea. You have to work on how that interlocks with Transmilenio, because it makes no sense that somebody that has to use both Transmilenio and the rail system has to pay twice, for example.
Yeah.
And that's one of, like, the main problems that this project of the Western Railway has right now.
But this is what I see. You know, again, I'm coming back to my studies and my investigations, and you see all these the signs on the traffic, on the lampposts downtown. This will be station number one, and it's right in front of, or right next door to the Voto Nacional and stuff. But why isn't it connecting to something else? Why, you know, it's just sort of there, isn't it? This will be where the metro starts, and it's like, but there's no sort of, I don't see anything where you see this, yeah, again, the meshing of the transports. Someone who's in stratos one or two, even three, is not going to want to get out of the metro and then have to get on a bus, you know, and pay twice. There has to be a combination ticket that allows, you know, this passage. It has to be that. And Transmilenio, for all of its benefits, the price is really aimed at stratos three and four. One and two would sooner be on buses because of the cost, you know. And so, is there going to be a discussion about subsidizing, you know, poorer income families or anything of that nature?
I think that's absolutely necessary. That's not a popular topic in election time either, because if you want a subsidy, you need to raise the money from somewhere else. But one very easy solution for that is to charge for on-street parking, for example.
Yes.
For those of our listeners that are not in Bogota, Bogota is probably one of the few, like, big cities in the world that doesn't charge for on-street parking. It's all done informally, which is a huge waste of resources for the city and is also a cause of a lot of chaos. So that's one way to raise money. The other way to raise money is with the projects, that the urban projects, the housing, the offices that emerge around metro stations. The new pot considers that. It's like, if you're going to be developing high density projects next to the metro line, pretty much based on the fact that now there's a metro, you need to pay some money so that the metro can run better. What else?
If you say there's this metro on the 72 and we're up by, I don't know, the Davivienda building, Davivienda could sponsor the station, you know?
That would make total sense.
It would make sense.
Make sense in Transmilenio now.
Yeah,
but they haven't done that. Transmilenio has not been very creative in that sense, in the sense of raising funds that are not based on the ticket.
There are no funds. It all comes from the ticket sale, right?
No, there's some advertisement on the buses inside and outside. They used to charge, like, foreign visitors for, like, going to the Transmilenio offices to, like, if you were the Mumbai mayor and you wanted to learn about how Transmilenio worked, they used to charge you.
Yeah.
I think they still do.
which
is interesting. I think it's fair. Mm. If you're going to share your experience, you can charge some money for that. But there's a lot more to do. And unfortunately, it also has to do with raising the cost of using a private vehicle, a motorcycle, a car. And this is very unpopular with people who use them, but it's a key policy for, like, cities that want to have good transportation, is improve public transportation, improve the facilities to use bicycle, to walk, but also disincentivize the use of cars and motorcycles.
Yes, it's true. I think that, I mean, that's it. I would pay more. I mean, I would pay on street parking. I mean, we have to pay off street parking as it is. So I'd pay on street parking in a heartbeat. If it went to the towards public transport around the city, then I'm fine. Or, and also, you know, filling in some of the holes
yes.
in the roads. I'm fine. You know, I actually try and live and work in the same area. Unfortunately, I work from home, but so I walk everywhere. You know, that's my solution is living closer. I mean, if I were to work in the north, I would move closer to my work because, you know, I don't want to be messed up in this and traffic and stuff. And, you know, I was stuck with, you know, 500 people in a bus that only, you know, seats 200 type thing. I don't know, I'm exaggerating. So tell me, let's get down to some of the basics when we finish. Now, you're running for Consejo. Exactly what is the Consejo? Because I, you know, I need this clarified for me.
Okay, so Colombia has a, is not a federal system, right? So we don't have state congresses or assemblies. What we have in Bogota is a mayor and then a consejo that seats 45 people. And the consejo is basically like the board of directors of the city. Yes, it's the... we call it a corporation in Spanish, but it's basically supposed to control that the mayor is doing things well. Yes, that's its main function. And it has a second function, which is to make something called acuerdos, which is the equivalent of city laws. But those aren't very important. And it has a third function, which is to approve some of the most important plans that the mayor has. So, for example, the POT, the Plan de Ordenamiento Territorial, the Plan de Desarrollo, which is the goals that the mayor sets for his 4 years in office. The council has to approve them. The budget for every year, the council has to approve them. And there's one final role, which is very important, although somewhat obscure, and it's... In Colombia, we have something called órganos de control, which are the Contraloría and the Personería in the local level. And these are basically the guys that are, in theory, making sure that all the public employees are doing their jobs properly. They are appointed by the city council. So what happens is that if the city council does not like the mayor, they appoint a contralor and a personero, which will basically bully the state, the city government for all its term. If the city council is friends with the mayor, they will appoint a contralor and a personero that will basically let the mayor do whatever they want.
So you could be elected to the council, the consejo, and let's say Galán or Uribe Turbay or Holman Morris win. So you're going to be, let's say, not in opposition, but if he's doing something you don't like, you're going to create problems.
Yes, and that's the same if Claudia wins. Like, I don't believe in this, like, radical loyalty that because the mayor is from my party, I have to approve everything of what they do. Or the opposite, if it's he's not from my party, that I will oppose everything he does.
This is a very progressive you know, thought process that you have, because there will be people who are elected in, you know, just to be the sheep for their party, of course, but hopefully not. But you actually have ideas and a desire to improve Bogota, and that comes back to your lo que es con Bogota es conmigo. It's really true. I mean, you are proud of Bogota, and it's something that you mentioned is this the need for a sense of identity and belonging, Bogota. And this has been very lacking, but it's changing. And I've said it 1,000 times on this podcast. It doesn't matter that your parents were born, you know, in an example, in Caquetá or Norte de Santander, and you've grown up in Bogota, you are Bogotano. You know, you are Bogotano. You know, people will say, yeah, I was born here, but my parents are from Norte de Santander, but you are Bogotano. So take hold of the city. It is your city. And that phrase they say, Bogota es de todos y nadie, that's so damaging, you know, because it's all of us, foreigner, for someone from the region, someone from, you know, elsewhere. You are Bogotano. You live here, you are investing your time in the city. So mm-hmm. I see that as your main. I see that as your main like desire mm-hmm. is to bring a sense of pride to Bogota. And of course, if you can help clean the rivers, reduce the perception of the insecurity, and obviously increasing security, create pride through us. You know, if we get a proper transport system, it's something to be proud of. Mm-hmm. I see that it all comes back to lo que es con Bogotá es conmigo. So I'm expecting in 4, 8, 12 years, that's going to be your slogan for mayor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you copyrighted it?
I haven't copyrighted it, but I love it. I think it really reflects what I think of the city. In English, it means... pretty much, if you mess with Bogota, you mess with me. but in what was I going to say? I think Bogota faces the same challenge that big cities like New York or London might have faced, and it's a big chunk of the population are immigrants. Yeah. But London and New York have made that a source of pride, a source of a common identity. Mm-hmm. And Bogota needs to move further that way to turn that diversity into an asset. And I think it will. We're not there yet, but we will get there.
But it's progress. It's step by step. If we can get the basic things right, then you know private entities can take on a mantle of more responsibility in Bogota as well, I would say. Well, listen, foreigners, Colombians, all of those who listen to the podcast, there's quite a substantial number of you. If you can vote, you've heard proposals by Diego Lacerna. He's for the Alianza Verde, it's the Green Party, number 26, if you're voting for the Consejo. He says on his card here, Bogota necesita más nerdos. So that's Bogota needs more nerds, and there's a pair of spectacles on the back. And actually, I think it's very much like his spectacles. So why don't we vote in some nerds and get Bogota, you know, moving and improve the city? It's been really fun to hear this from, you know, and as someone who's aspiring to political office for the right reasons, I think, not for mermeladas, not for handouts and kickbacks and so on. It's nice to hear this. And so let me just take this moment and say thank you to Diego Lacerna for spending his time, very busy because he's on the campaign trail, to take this moment and speak to us for, 35 minutes.
No, thank you, Richard. It always makes me very happy to have foreigners come here and take pride in our city, see its value. Of course, it's undeniable that we have problems, but I think our potential is much bigger than our problems.
There you go.
It's also important to say that foreign residents in Bogota, people that have been living here for I think more than 5 years and have their cédula de extranjería, they can vote. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's only time to register until August 27th, which is tomorrow. But so it might be too late once you listen to this.
Yeah, because it goes out next week.
If you haven't registered to vote, you should look into that. As I said before, Bogota does not belong to the people who were born here. It belongs to the people who live here. And foreign nationals are more than welcome to participate in the decisions we make in our city.
Thank you very much. You heard it here first from Diego Lacerna, number 26, Alianza Verde. Don't forget that. Get in touch with me. That's ColombiaCalling@gmail.com, Twitter, of course, Facebook, and all the necessary social media ills. I've been Richard McCall talking to Diego Lacerna for episode 289 of the Colombia Calling podcast. It's been a great show. Thank you again for listening, and be sure to tune in next week where we'll have another interviewee talking about great things or interesting things going on here in Colombia. Bye-bye.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who specialize in saving the day and for the ones who've mastered the art of keeping business moving. We offer industrial-grade supplies for every industry,
with same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders, all backed by real people ready to help, so you can get the right answers and products right when you need them. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.